So we've been, we'll finish up the yamas and niyamas. We've been doing a, which for me is, I really love it. And we do it, we do it about once a year. We come back to the yamas and niyamas, which are the ethical code, right? And I mentioned to you that I finally put them up online. I have all of George Washington's code of ethics up online. And I've mentioned to you that I've been trying to live by his code of ethics. And it's so unbelievably difficult. You thought the yamas and niyamas were difficult. Like George Washington like really pushes it a lot further. He's like the ultimate yogi. I mean, I don't know anything about him, but his code of ethics are exquisite. But he has this one, which I can't figure out. And if you know what it means, talk to me after class. Number 60. I'm going through them, and I'm like, okay. He says, be not immodest in urging your friends to discover a secret. I have no idea. Very abstract, right? But if you figure it out, let me know. What is it? 112 or something like that? 114? That he wrote at age 17, I think? Yeah. But beautiful. So we've been looking at the yamas and niyamas, and we're thinking about the yamas is weeding the garden, and then the niyamas is replanting the garden, right? So first the weeding, and we're looking at the first line of the Yoga Sutras, right? And Yoga Sutta Virti Nirodaha. Yoga is the control, or we can say the regulation, or the channeling, or mastery, or integration of the modifications of the mind field. So again, we've been breaking that down, looking at it slightly differently. Like there's the chittam, right? And the way I've been talking about chittam is luminosity. There's a luminosity that is the essence, right? There, we have an essential luminosity. And then these vrittis obscure that luminosity. So yoga, in this reading, there's many readings of it, but yoga is cleaning the way, right? Is stopping the vrittis from the chittam. Cleaning the vrittis from the chittam. The rodahaing the vrittis from the chittam. So yoga is the stilling of the modifications of the luminosity. Yoga is the stilling of the obscurations of the luminosity. A slightly different reading, but so, and the path to do that is through the yamas and niyamas. And the reason it's so beautiful is because you don't have to understand anything I just said, and you can still just gently follow that path of the yamas and niyamas, and slowly the heart starts to blossom. Right? It's not an intellectual path, it's just a sweet kind of devotional blossoming. And so the first one is ahimsa, and we've been talking about this in terms of taking care of other beings. I'll tell you a story I've never told anybody, and it's going to sound totally absurd, but I one time found a dying lizard, and I gave him mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, and it freaking worked. I swear to God, I found it at the bottom of a pool. I had no idea how long he'd been at the bottom of the pool, right? And I had this, for some reason I became possessed with this gentle, deep caring for this being. Just for a moment it came over me. And I wanted to save it. And, you know, so there's this like dead, drowned lizard at the bottom of the pool. And I got a real strong intuition that its life was close or something, you know? So I was like, what the hell do you do to it? And like, well, if it was a kid or like an adult, you would breathe into its mouth. And so I did that. And it was a long process. It was really long. And about 15 minutes later, water came out of it. And then about a half hour later, he started moving. You know, and I watched it over a period. Anyway, it's a ridiculous story. But, and then he walked away. And it's just a gentle, caring, like, you know, normally I'd see it and I'd be like, oh, the lizard is corroding my pool. You see what I mean? But it's a gentle kind of caring for the world. Ahimsa is not harming. It's having a gentle caring for the beings in the world. And I have these evil, evil beings in my life now. They're called county inspectors. And they're evil people. They're like varmints, you know? And so one of them, Dave, was coming up to my cabin. And Dave, for a reason that I later found out was potentially not correct. It was potentially an illegal request he made of me. He made me tear down one of my walls and rebuild it. So Dave came up to my cabin, and I'm being really dishonest. I'm smiling, and I'm being nice. I'm offering him some of my mom's cookies, and I'm like saying, would you like some seltzer water? You know, and meanwhile, I'm just thinking, you varmint, you evil man, you know? And he passes me, and I'm, you know, I'm smiling and stuff, and then he eventually walks away. And I'm like, thank God, you know, like I passed, he's out of my life. And then the next day, I felt like a sadness for Dave, because I realized he's got a tricky job. For one, people are always trying to deceive him. I mean, think about a life like that, you know, where you're always kind of dealing with deception almost. And everybody's always kissing up to him, so he doesn't really know how people feel. You know, it's like being a health inspector at a restaurant. There's no authentic friendships that can happen. And I suddenly realized that outside of my own needs, right, like I need my needs met, outside of that, I actually love Dave. And I want to watch over Dave. And I felt like I wish there was something I could do for Dave. Like I wish there was some way I could take care of Dave, you know? But what's obscuring that chittam, right, the virtues that are obscuring that chittam are my own anxieties. Do you see what I mean? If I wasn't concerned about my own agenda, then as Dave walked up to my cabin, I would think, how can I really take care of him? You know? It's a different way of thinking. And the first beautiful path on this is ahimsa, is begin to care for the world. And again, we've talked about puppy goggles, right? Start with what you can do. And oftentimes it's puppies. It's easy to love puppies. Like you just adore them. You look at them and you adore them. How can I get from Dave, from puppies to Dave, you know? And so ahimsa. The next one is asteya, which is not stealing. Which Ben Franklin says, detract not from others. A beautiful look at not stealing, right? Detract not from others. And then we looked at brahmacharya, which... Sri Pattabhi Joyce says is, if you're in the householder life, which many of us are, he says brahmacharya is committing yourself to another person and letting them take you to God. That's what brahmacharya is. And then aparigraha, which is not grasping. And again, I think about this in terms of traveling. You travel light because you don't want the burden of your things to weigh you down. You know, so not grasping to things. And then we moved into the niyamas, and we talked about saucha, right, which is cleanliness. And Ben Franklin says this, he says, let all your things have their places, let each part of your business have its time. Right? It's so simple, but it's such a powerful way to live. And we talked last week about having no orphans in your life, no possessions that don't have any place where they can live. So just a clutter-free life. No possessions that don't have any place to live. My home is just an orphanage, you know. It's just like all these, like, I mean, particularly now, you wouldn't even believe it, actually. And then, so we're looking now at santosha. What's santosha? Contentment. Yeah, contentment. And I was thinking about this. We talked a little bit about this at St. Matthew's. But and I want us to think about this idea that we are royalty, right? And it's true when you really look at the Earth's population, when you look at the Earth's population of human beings, what we in this room have, we are at the utmost pinnacle of humanity in terms of comfort, in terms of power. We have incredible power. And it's amazing that we're also so discontent. I was thinking it'd be an interesting sci-fi book. Oftentimes when I'm meditating, I'm actually like writing scripts or things like that. But, you know, in Buddhism, you have this idea of the human realm, the god realm, and then the like hell realms, basically. And the god realms live in utter pleasure, but their only real problem is that they're jealous of other gods. And I was thinking it'd be interesting if there was a whole group of people on a planet that thought they were in the human realm, and then it turned out they were in the god realm, and they didn't know it, you know? And I think we're a little bit like that. And I was inspired by the coronation speech of the fifth king of Bhutan, right, which I read the other night. And think about that. Imagine that you're giving this speech. Like, in a sense, I was thinking of Santosha is like coming into your coronation. Like, accepting your responsibility is a powerful elite being. Which sounds prideful, right? It sounds like that'll get you into a deluded state. Like, I'm elite, right? But think about it in a slightly different way. As a kind of responsibility towards humanity. That you actually, you are elite. Whether you like it or not, you're highly, highly educated. You have incredible wealth at your disposal. And you have incredible comforts. You are elite, which means not that you're not there because you're better than other people. You're there by dumb luck, really. You know, I mean, or karma, right? But we're here because of one of my teachers says because of your past life, which you know you can thank them, but it's really not you know you. It's you were there. You're there, kind of because of dumb luck. But there's a responsibility in that. And here's a beautiful way of thinking about that responsibility, right? So the King of Bhutan says this at age 27 in 2008. Throughout my reign, I will never rule you as a king. I will protect you as a parent. I will care for you as a brother, and I will serve you as a son. As the king of a Buddhist nation, my duty is not only to ensure your happiness today, but to create the fertile ground from which you may gain the fruit of the spiritual pursuit and obtain good karma. So now imagine if you went into your office in the morning and you stood on your desk and said that. You know, like, could I get everybody's attention, you know? Throughout my reign here at the office, I will never treat you as a king. I will protect you as a parent. I will care for you as a brother. I will serve you as a son. You know, it'd be a fascinating day at the office. But then imagine just doing that in your mind as you walk into your office. You know, it's a beautiful thing. And that's Santosha. That's contentment. That's accepting who you are in all of its beauty and complexity. And relaxing into that. You know, relaxing into that and then applying ahimsa, right? Starting to serve people. And it doesn't relate a lot, but it relates in a kind of strange way. And I want to read this. This is an exquisite book that's been very close to me for 18 years now, and it's Dimensions of Classical Sufi Thought. And this line, just let it sink into you, it's from the 10th century. At the beginning, I was mistaken in four respects. I concerned myself to remember God, to know Him, to love Him, and to seek Him. Okay, he was saying, I was mistaken in these four ways. I was trying to remember God, I was trying to know God, I was trying to love God, and I was trying to seek God. When I had come to the end, when I had come to, the writer obviously came to some place of spiritual awakening. When I had come to the end, I saw that he had remembered me before I remembered him. That his knowledge of me preceded my knowledge of him. That his love towards me had existed before my love for him. And that he had sought me before I had sought him. It's a kind of strange quote to put in terms of Santosha. But there's some deep quality of that you are so... you belong before you realize you belong. You see, something like that. That you belong exactly as you are before you realize you belong exactly as you are. That there's some place that you inhabit that you're supposed to inhabit. That also has a responsibility to it. And the less you inhabit that space, the less you're upholding your responsibility. So that's Santosha, and then we move in. Oh, and one other thing, I wrote. I was looking at my. I'm throwing out a lot of stuff and letters, and I keep coming across these beautiful things. And this was from a journal when I lived at a monastery. And one of the elderly brothers said to me one day, he said, and I don't know in what context we're talking about this, but he said, a kiss is not to take in, but to surrender. A kiss is not to take in, but to surrender. So it's this idea of surrendering to the divine. You know? So then we move into tapas. And tapas is just spiritual hardships, enduring spiritual hardships. I love Ram Dass. He said, he went to his guru, Neem Karoli Baba, and he says, I want to study with you. And Neem Karoli Baba said, I will study with you only under one condition. He says, every day let go a little bit of your anger. Every day let go a little bit of your anger. And Ram Dass said he never thought of himself as an angry person. You know, he's like, and in that moment he started getting angry. He's like, what are you talking about? I'm not angry. You know, it's just like, you know, and then he slowly, by the power of being close to his spiritual teacher, he started to realize the extensiveness of his anger. And again, it reminds you of St. Teresa, right? When you really look at St. Teresa, it's so realistic. Every day, just let go of a little bit of your anger. And that's tapas. That's enduring spiritual hardship. And I had a beautiful opportunity to do that today. A cook really pissed me off at work. He, you know, and it always comes the same way. He blamed me for something, and he was at fault. And I happened to be in the good situation where I could prove it to him. So I let it go for a minute, and I got my, you know, I relaxed for a second. Because he came at me with such a ferocity. I thought he was actually joking. Like, and I started laughing. I realized he was really serious. And then I started getting mad. I'm like, how dare you? You know, like, how dare, are you, you're like really mad at something that's your fault, you know? So I started getting mad. So I walked away, you know? And then because I'm so stubborn, I couldn't let it go, you know? So I'm like, I can now prove this to him, right? So I come back in, and I won't explain the whole story, but I have the paper and I can prove it. I go, listen, you know, what you're saying is inaccurate and it's right here. And he looked at the paper and he said, I'm not even talking to you anymore about this. This is over. You know, he wouldn't give me the satisfaction of saying, you know, he wouldn't, like, there was no, he was as prideful as me. He wouldn't be like, you're right, I'm sorry. You know, he's like, you know, and he said, and then he said, have a good life. So then I was like really bad, right? So I walked into the other room and I thought, like, wow, actually, maybe I should try some of the things I often teach, right? So I decided to do the hamster thing, right? And I'm like, wow, I'm gonna see what's happening in the body. I'm gonna forget about the anger. What's happening in the body? Physically, what's happening? And you know, and you find all kinds of stuff out. But I noticed that energy was rising from the hara, right, from down here, and it was rising up, and then it was pulling my shoulders in like that. And I felt this. As soon as I just noticed, and as soon as I stopped to just notice, I realized that my body was concaving in itself, right? Very subtly, but energetically, I could feel these whoosh. And I thought, wow, that's interesting. So I just started to watch it. And as I was watching, the anger started to fade. And then my need to be right started to fade. And this doesn't always happen, but it's a pleasant byproduct sometimes, right? And then I said, I engaged in the hardest spiritual hardship I've done in a long time. You know, and this is what tapas is, right? I went in and I said, you know what? I think you're right. To him, which was a lie, right? But to me, it was like, and it was hard because I was so right. I mean, I was so unbelievably right. And Mother Teresa says something beautiful. She says, forgiveness is not just letting it go, it's forgetting. Right? It's forgetting. And you know, and as long as I remember this with this guy, it's not real forgiveness. It's just tapas. And tapas, it's so powerful, right? And that's what real tapas is. It's, again, it's not like meditating for years, or it's not like doing anything like that. Tapas is going to your coworker and saying you're sorry for something that you didn't do wrong, and doing it as a kind of unilateral act. You know? And that's tapas. And you know, I share that with you because I was successful in one moment, you know. But mostly, and then real tapas is when you can do that in the moment. You see, this is like an hour-long rage process. And then, you know, I had plenty of time to think about it. I was like, all right, I'll try it, whatever. You know. So that's tapas. And then we have svadaya, which is self-study. And I think of this as just any kind of meditation practice, right? Exploring what's going on in the heart, watching the way you manipulate conversations to get what you want. Just study, become curious, right? Mind's lab, like take your mind into the lab and start to know. And do some kind of daily practice of self-study. And some of us have a practice where we look at more our morality throughout the day. Some kind of practice where you can actually look at yourself. And any of you that have a regular yoga practice, you know this comes up. You know, because you oftentimes dislike your yoga teacher. And you're forced to actually look at yourself. You know, you're forced to explore the mind, explore yourself. And then the last one, I just want to finish it with them tonight so we can move on, is Ishvara Pranidhar, and which you can think of as a kind of devotion. And the way I think about it is taking yourself to a teacher. And the way I think about this specifically is taking yourself, trying to be around people that are emotionally or intellectually or spiritually smarter than you are. That's all. You know, like I like playing ping pong with my housemate Neil because he's so much better than me. So he's constantly pushing me up. And now he's so much better that to make it interesting for him, he has to play left-handed. And now he's beating me left-handed, which makes me more mad, you know. But you know, you bring yourself to somebody that's emotionally, spiritually, or intellectually smarter than you. And just by being, and yoga too, right? Do yoga with people. Always find the best guy in the room, best girl in the room, and try to put your mat next to them. And it'll just gently bring you up through osmosis. It's a kind of devotion, right? A kind of heartfelt devotion. So that's the yamas and niyamas. Again, the first thing we do is we rip out the weeds. You know, with dishonesty, caring for the world, with all these things. And then the next thing is we begin to replant the garden. And through that process, right, the luminosity is allowed to shine through. Through that process, the luminosity comes through. Hazali is an Islamic saint. He's to Islam what Jason Kappa is to Tibetan Buddhism. He's like, they call him like the second Muhammad. Incredible author. He wrote a beautiful book called The Alchemy of Happiness. He died in 1111, and he was born somewhere around 1039 or something like that. But he says this: the knowledge which results in renunciation consists of the realization that what is renounced is of little value in comparison with what is received. That's all. The knowledge which results in renunciation consists of the realization that what is renounced is of little value in comparison of what is received. So again, as we apply some effort, some tapas, towards letting go of our pride, we realize that in letting go of pride, there's a much more beautiful luminosity awaiting us. And that luminosity begins, the closer we get to it. St. Teresa calls it like these concentric circles, right? The closer we get towards the center of the concentric circle, the more its laser beam attaches onto us and it pulls us in, you know? It's just at the beginning we need to apply willpower. And then the laser beam, right, of the heart of the saints begins to just pull us in. And we realize that it's not so much that we're looking for God, it's that God has been looking for us. Right? So thank you so much. And we have...